So you're standing.
If I cut your presentation, then you'll put the obstacle. Get back to
I think that's it. I know that everything's loading up now.
Yes.
So we've got a couple of minutes and I get the other books.
So you are the chair?
I'm the chair.
Okay.
Well, my background's also I'm a health economist, so I'm a professor of health economy. I'm also Department of Social Policy here. I talked about the health and social care. I think it was actually Elias who was chair of the Center for Peace and Political Reform. So I got back to him to share. All moments of discussion, people want to learn about hospital finance and that's the arena I've been given. So I won't say very much. I'll hand it over to you. And it's your show, really. You're the stars of the show.
Okay.
And then I'll see you in person. Next one?
You are coming.
So it's all organized now?
Not
everything, but I think it's okay. Yeah. Well, it's
bad because it's a semi-final. But maybe there's nobody from Europe.
Possibly. I think Spain will still be there. I'm not so sure about Germany.
Actually, what is in the from the local reform program. Nobody knows what is actually happening because we have given the power to the, to the local municipalities and the
so we call it Sweden after all.
Yes,
got rid of her, but you call it. Okay. So we make a start as it's just after four. My name's Alistair McGuire. I'm a professor of health economics here at the LSE and head of social policy. And I'm standing in for Elias Mossy-Alice, who was meant to chair, but he's currently trying to fight the deficit as a Greek MP in Athens, so he can't be here today. Could I first of all just acknowledge and thank the knowledge transfer group within the NHS for helping to put on this seminar today. The idea is to, of course, debate and exchange ideas. And to kick that off, we've got three presenters, one from Germany, one from the Netherlands, and one from Finland, to talk on hospital financing, which is the theme for today. They'll talk for about 20 to 25 minutes each. We can take questions of clarification and technical information if you want straight after the talks, but I'd rather go through all of the talks and then open up to the floor for discussion after that. After the discussion has finished, or after I stop it at 6 o'clock rather, there is a reception which is going to be held in the old building, which is building A on your map within your folders, but there will be people to show you the way. It's kind of out the door and round in a semicircle to the main building, then up to the fourth floor. So without any further ado, let me introduce Wilm Quentin, who was at the LSE but defected to Berlin, and is our resident expert today on the German system. So over to you, Will.
Yeah. Thank you. My presentation, can I help you?
Are the presentations on the website here? Or
there on the desktop.
Is it this one?
It should be that one, yeah.
That one?
That one, yeah.
Okay. Got lots of pictures or something.
Some pictures.
Some pictures. Okay, so then it's that.
Do you maybe have a pointer?
Pointer, I don't think we do have,
you
but you can use the mouse. The mouse can help
okay,
out.
Yeah.
Okay, over to you, Ron.
Okay, yeah, I'm Wilm Quentin and I'm not Reinhard Busse, who was originally supposed to come here to talk today. But he had problems with his schedule, and so he sent me to come here. And I'm working with Reinhard Busse in the EuroDRG project, which is a big European research project about DRGs in Europe. And I'm very honored to be here at LSE, where I also did my master's, and I'm happy to be here with Alistair McGuire, who was my professor of health economics. And
questions later, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so. So I have been asked to talk about first about DRGs in general, and then about DRGs in Germany, about experiences and what happened. And then I want to use the opportunity to advertise our project, which is the EuroDRG project. And so about diagnosis-related groups in general, I think it is important to consider the alternatives for hospital reimbursement when talking about diagnosis-related groups, because this is why all hospital reimbursement systems have their problems, their strengths and weaknesses, and only when considering the strengths and weaknesses of the alternatives, it is possible to also see why DRGs are so widely accepted across Europe. And then I want to talk about the main building blocks of DIG systems, which are always patient classification system and then the mechanism to determine the hospital payment rate. So when looking at different options for hospital reimbursement, I would like to start with the global budgets and per diems. Global budgets and per diems were the main modes of paying hospitals in Europe prior to the introduction of DRGs in most countries. And they have strengths and weaknesses. The main strength of global budgets is that they are very effective in cost containment, since they predetermine the budget that the hospital is supposed to receive during the year, and then the hospital is supposed to act within this budget. And they are administratively simple, and they provide planning security for providers. However, they do not provide incentives to be very productive or to increase efficiency, and they may provide some incentives to avoid sicker patients, since these could be more costly. And for per diems, which was the other way which was frequently used, they are relatively similar. They are also administratively simple. It's enough to just count the number of days, and then hospitals receive their reimbursement based on the number of days that the patient spent in hospital. And so they are somewhat more related to resource consumption of patients, because sicker patients can be assumed to be staying in hospital for longer than healthier patients. But they also provide negative incentives, or they also have weaknesses, which is that they provide incentives to increase the length of stay above which would be required just when looking at what is necessary for the patient. And they provide few incentives for performance or efficiency, because hospitals can gain the same amount of money by keeping patients longer in the hospital as when they treat more patients and perform more services. So global budgets in general lead to undertreatment, and per diems are considered to lead to inappropriate treatment. On the other hand of the spectrum is the system that was most frequently used in the US prior to the introduction of DRGs, which is fee-for-service, which means that hospitals were able to bill every single service that they provided to their patients. And this was good because it provided incentives that hospitals would provide all necessary services to their patients. However, it was debatable whether all services were really necessary, because in general, also services that were not strictly necessary would be reimbursed, and so they provided incentives for overtreatment, which is the main weakness of fee-for-service systems. So somewhere in the middle between these two extremes are DRGs. They are, from an American perspective, they are more prospective, because the payment rate is determined in advance. And this is also why often DRG systems are called prospective payment systems. However, from a European perspective, this term doesn't really make sense, because compared to global budgets or per diems, DRGs are really not more prospective, because global budgets are the most prospective way of financing hospitals. But the American literature has also influenced the discourse in Europe. And the main advantage why DRGs are so successful is that reimbursement is related to the performance of hospitals. The DRGs allow a relatively accurate measurement of hospital performance, and which is an advantage over global budgets or per diems. On the other hand, they do not provide the negative incentives to overtreat patients, because hospitals are held to reduce the number of the costs per stay. So, for example, they can try to reduce the length of stay, or they can optimize clinical treatment pathways, or they can try to avoid unnecessary tests. So these are the main advantages, but on the other hand, of course, also DRGs have disadvantages, which is that they are administratively complex, which clinicians, at least in Germany, often complain about, that they have to code all diagnoses and procedures, and there are some other negative incentives. So when talking about DRGs, the main fundamental building blocks of DRGs are always the patient classification systems and hospital payment rate setting mechanisms. So the patient classification system is really what was the origin, what was developed in the US in the 1970s, when researchers at Yale University tried to define hospital products. So they said they would not be interested in what the individual services that hospitals were providing, but they wanted to know what patients hospitals treated, and then to find out homogeneous groups of patients with homogeneous resource consumption. So they first looked at the diagnosis and tried to define homogeneous groups, but because hospitals are not only treating certain patients, but they are using certain inputs, doing certain procedures, and these need to be considered in order to find groups of patients with homogeneous resource consumption. So based on this patient classification system, using diagnosis and procedures, a DRG is formed, and this then gives a measure of hospital performance. So based on this measure of hospital performance, then the payment mechanism was designed, which uses the derived group of DRG to assign a cost weight, and then it's a cost weight because it establishes a relationship between the costs of treating patients in this specific group of patients and the average of all other cases treated in a country. That's the usual way. So most countries use a cost weight approach, which has the cost weight and the base rate, in order to calculate the exact reimbursement for hospitals. And this may not be true for the UK or for England, but most countries use it because it makes it more easy to adapt the system to different settings. For example, in Germany there's a different base rate that is used for different states, and in other countries there are many more different base rates for other settings. Then, however, it is important not only to consider the objective of hospital payment systems should always be to give hospitals enough resources to perform all necessary services, but not to give them too many resources, because that would encourage inefficiencies. So a prior research project of the which also a European research project which Reinhard Busse was part of at my university, they looked at the determinants of hospital costs in Europe, and they found that the patient variables and the medical and management decision variables are important, but that also structural variables play a role. And so in order to really give hospitals what they need for treating patients, it might be necessary to consider these structural variables, and that is like the teaching status or the wage level, and that is also what is done in many DRG systems around the world. So now I come to DRGs in Germany. For DRGs in Germany, I first want to talk about the experience with DRGs, which was really only the introduction up until now, and then about current developments and options for the future. But first, some background figures on the German hospital sector, which is there are 2,100 hospitals in Germany, of which 1,780 are reimbursed through DRGs. The difference is that there are some psychiatric hospitals and rehabilitative hospitals which are not financed through the DRG system. These hospitals treat about 17 million inpatient cases, and they receive a total financing sum of about 57 billion euros. Then there is the specificity of the German hospital financing system, which is that there's a dualistic way of hospital financing. That means that sickness funds pay the running costs, whereas states pay the investment costs for hospitals. So hospitals have to apply to the state governments if they want to receive funding for a new building or extension of an existing building or something like that. So the DRG system, it was introduced by law in the year 2000, which was the Statutory Health Insurance Reform Act, and that defined the basic features of the DRG system. It then took about 3 years to develop the system for Germany, and it was introduced first on a budget-neutral basis between 2003 and 2004. And then since 2005 until now, there was a convergence phase where it was really introduced and the payment was set to be based on DRGs. During the phase of preparation, also the responsibilities for the DRG system were assigned. So it's particularity of the German system is that it was the self-governing bodies which were supposed to introduce the system themselves. The self-governing bodies, that is these, the German Hospital Society, the Federal Association of Sickness Funds, and the Association of Private Health Insurances, which were really supposed to develop the system themselves or decide in the introduction of a system. And in order to do so, they founded an institute, which is the ENEC, the German DRG Institute, which is responsible for the technical management of the system. So when constructing the system, there are, on the one hand, those two fundamental building blocks, the patient classification system and the price setting mechanism that I mentioned before. But on the other hand, when constructing it, you also have to think about the how to collect the data to in order to calculate the price and how exactly to calculate the reimbursement rate for hospitals. So during the next slides, I'm going to talk a little bit more about these steps of constructing the DRG system in Germany. So in Germany, the self-governing bodies that I mentioned before, they decided on importing the Australian DRG system, the Australian classification system, into Germany. And the reason why they did that was that at the time, which was in the year 2000, they thought that the Australian DRG system was better able to reflect the severity of cases in the differences in severity of cases. And this is because the Australian DRG system, and consequently also the German DRG system, first formed the stasis DRG based on the procedures and the main main diagnosis and procedures form the basis DRG, and that can then be split according to comorbidities or medical procedures, and then you get several different severity DRGs. And since then, many other systems have also adopted a system of having different severities per DRG. But at the time of the year 2000, that was why the Germans decided to use the Australian system. So then this patient classification system is updated annually, and that this process of updating the system is based on data that is collected at hospitals and then transferred to a data center and further on to the German DRG Institute. And they receive not only data on the different cases, but also data on costs from a sample of hospitals. And based on this information on costs, which is relatively detailed for every case, the German DRG Institute recalculates the cost weights and also updates the patient classification system every year. This data sample that I mentioned for the calculation of costs was at the beginning much smaller than it is today. It was at the beginning 125 hospitals, and today it is 253 hospitals. And so this is today about 13% of all hospitals in Germany, which send detailed cost accounting data to the German DRG Institute. And at the beginning, this sample did not include university hospitals, but since 2005, it has then been extended also to include university hospitals. And so this information on costs of each individual case is then used to find the average costs of all cases in one DRG, which is then used to calculate the cost weight by dividing the average cost of all cases in one DRG through the average costs of all cases in German hospitals. But in fact, it's not really the average cost of all DRGs in this DRG, but only the cost of the DRG inliers, which excludes certain cases which are very expensive or which stay for a very long time in hospitals, or which stay only very short time in hospitals. And so for the reimbursement rate then, this also depends on the time that the patients stay in hospital. The inliers, which is the majority of cases, are reimbursed using this cost weight and the base rate. But then for the very expensive cases, in order to avoid that the hospitals alone have to carry the risk of financial risk of patients who stay very long in hospitals, there are surcharges for every day that patients stay longer than the upper length of stay threshold, which is defined, which is very high, like it's two standard deviations of the arithmetic mean of all cases in German hospitals. And also for short stay outliers, there are deductions which are supposed to avoid negative consequences like early inappropriate discharges of patients and So hospitals receive deductions. So, and after these basic features were developed, the DRG system was first introduced in a budget-neutral way, which means that the existing hospital budgets, which used to be negotiated, were just transformed from being paid on a per diem basis. So it used to be that hospitals negotiated their budget, 100 million euros, and then health insurance funds paid them per day that patients stayed in the hospital. And from 2004 onwards, they were paid based on the cases that they treated in the hospital, but the budget remained the same for the time being. Then this worked by having a hospital-specific base rate for every individual hospital, and the base rate was calculated again using the average costs of treating patients in this hospital. But then the ultimate aim was to have a statewide base rate or to increase the importance of the DRGs for the hospital. So gradually the hospital-specific base rates were adjusted to statewide base rates in order to give the same amount of money to all hospitals in one state if they treated the same patients. So the hospital-specific base rate was gradually moved towards a uniform statewide base rate. And in order to avoid negative consequences on the hospitals, this phase of convergence, how it was called in Germany, was stretched over a 5-year period with gradual adjustments to the statewide base rate, and also the total reduction of the hospital budgets was kept every year, so hospitals could not lose too much of the money that they had before in order to give them time to adjust to the changes in the hospital financing system. And however, from the year 2010 onwards, now they are all going to be paid based on the statewide base rates. And the adjustments were quite big. At the beginning, the hospital-specific base rates were between 3,200 euros for the more inefficient hospitals, whereas the hospital-specific base rates were at about 2,200 euros for the more efficient hospitals. So they had to adjust quite a bit. However, it's not only the base rates that changed over this convergence phase, but also the relative cost weights. You can see here that the DRGs the number of DRGs increased from about 660, which was what was adopted from Australia, to about 1,200, which is today in 2010. And this allows a more accurate reflection of the divergence in costs of treating different patients. So also the range of cost weights increased to now the maximum range is, the maximum cost weight is about 73, and this gives a more accurate reflection of the cost of treating patients, for example, in university hospitals, who at the beginning in 2003 did not contribute their data to the development of the system. And also supplementary fees were introduced for certain high-cost services. So now after 10 years of experience with DRGs, there are still many open points for discussion. Now there's it is the state's objective to converge now from different statewide base rates to its one nationwide base rate, so that finally all hospitals in Germany are going to receive the same money for treating the same patients. Then, since the Hospital Reform Act in the year 2009, states have, or it is still in the process of being introduced, but states have the opportunity to, instead of using this dualistic way of financing, so directly paying hospitals for investment costs, and instead the DRG Institute will also calculate investment weights, which can then be used by states to transfer the investment costs to hospitals. Also, the same act mandated that there should be a new system for psychiatric hospitals, which should be something similar to the DRG system, and the process of introduction is very similar. It's also developed by the DRG Institute, but it's going to be more based on per diem payments, which are going to be adjusted for patient characteristic and treatment variables. And then there's always debate about selective or uniform negotiations between hospitals and sickness funds, because for example, up until now, it's always that all hospitals have the right to provide the services, but there are debates about having selective negotiations where specific sickness funds negotiate with specific hospitals and then, for example, guarantee them a certain number of patients and then demand deductions in the cost weight that they are going to pay for the individual patient. And something similar is also around quality assurance, where they could negotiate adjustments to the cost weights depending on the quality of provided services. So a summary of what the German DRG system, I would say there's first the central role of the self-governing bodies, which is very particular for the German system, that the hospitals and the sickness funds introduce the system themselves and develop and update it annually, that it is a very data-driven system with annual updates, and that detailed cost data are collected at all hospitals, at the sample of hospitals in Germany, which then goes into the annual updates, and that it was introduced over a very long period of time to give hospitals time to adjust to the changing context. So the last point is the EuroDRG project, which is a large research project with partners in 13 countries, amongst others UNTO and SWIS1. And we are going to publish a book on DRGs in Europe towards the end of this year through Open University Press, which is going to describe the different DRG systems in the countries, and which is also going to have thematic chapters on specific topics like the cost accounting system or the patient classification systems, and how countries deal with introducing innovative technologies into their DRG systems. And then another part of the project, we are looking at the grouping algorithms and trying to map the specific grouping algorithms in different countries, and then try to find out also if the determinants of hospital costs are really considered in the grouping algorithms, which should be the objective of hospital payment systems. Yeah, and that's it, and thank you very much for your attention.
Any questions of a technical nature or any further information that needs to be gathered from Wilm on the German system? If not, we'll go into CX110's discussion then, which is about the Netherlands. I hope this is your one. So again, just step it down and you can use the mouse if you want.
Yeah. Right. Thank you for inviting me to talk today to you. My talk will be about the structural reforms of the Dutch healthcare system. First, I will talk a little bit about me. I joined the Institute for Medical Technology Assessment about 5 years ago. And my main research topics involve the accuracy and feasibility of costing hospital services. And one of my bigger projects was the EuroDRG project, where I met UNTO and Wilm. So over the past 20 years, structural reforms of the national healthcare sectors took place in many European countries. And the main reason for structural reforms were to improve the efficiency of hospital care in order to reduce hospital costs. Besides, many countries defined their own specific reasons. And before 2005, in the Netherlands, structural budgeting and reimbursement in the Netherlands were mainly targeted at financing healthcare organizations based on production volume rather than on quality. Structural reforms were implemented in 2005. A central element of these reforms was the transition from a supply-led system to a demand-led system. The intention was to shape the healthcare system primarily according to the needs of the patients. This was to be accomplished by three instruments. to increase competition between health insurers, competition between healthcare providers, and financing the primary care chain based on quality. First, I would like to discuss the three instruments and what they mean, and then I will discuss if they were able to support the transition from a supply-led system to a demand-led system. The first instrument was the integration of social and private insurance schemes to increase competition between health insurers. Where public and private insurances previously coexisted, they have been integrated into a single mandatory scheme in 2005. This mandatory scheme provides coverage to the whole population, and when customers have a free choice of health insurer. A risk equalization fund compensates insurers for overrepresentation of bad risks. Insurers are to compete by critically purchasing care for their customers, and the market power of insurers would be determined by willingness of customers to switch between insurers and to go to hospitals which are contracted by their insurer. The second instrument was a free access to the hospital care market to increase competition between healthcare providers. Where hospital care was previously only provided by hospitals, independent treatment centers and private clinics were allowed to enter the hospital market from 2006. Independent treatment centers, just like hospitals, work on a not-for-profit basis and provide care that is covered by the mandatory scheme. Only they focus on non-acute outpatient care. Private clinics work on a for-profit basis and provide non-insured care. The third instrument to support this transition from a supply-led system to a demand-led system was the introduction of the DBC case mix system for the registration and reimbursement of care provided by hospitals and medical specialists. DBC stands for Diagnosis-Treatment Combination. It includes the whole set of hospital services provided by the hospital and medical specialist from the first consultation at the hospital until treatment completion. There are many differences between DRG system and the DBC system. Firstly, there are differences in patient classification. Patients are classified according to diagnosis and treatment, and more precisely, they are stratified according to five dimensions. And these are medical specialty, type of care, demand for care, diagnosis, and treatment setting and nature. The information used to classify patients includes clinical and resource use data. Care intensity is not used because secondary diagnosis and procedures, comorbidity and grading of severity are not yet registered. Owing to the detailed classification, the DBC system comprised 100,000 DBCs at introduction. However, due to complaints of medical specialists who have to register the DBCs, this figure dropped to 30,000 currently and will soon be further reduced to 3,000. All hospitals and independent treatment centers reimburse all of their inpatient and outpatient care according to the system, and in addition, this system is implemented in mental health care. The distinction between list A and list B DBCs is especially interesting in the light of the transition from a supply-led system to a demand-led system. All DBCs are exhaustively assigned to list A or list B. List A DBCs have fixed national prices and are largely financed according to the financing system in place before 2005. So this is based on production volume rather than on quality. In contrast, the prices for these DDBCs result from negotiations between health insurers and hospitals. These BDBCs mean to encourage insurers and hospitals to negotiate on quality. In order to achieve the situation in which the primary care chain is financed based on quality, if the government intends to gradually increase the share to 70%. Currently, it already increased from about 10% at introduction to 33% in 2009. Major list B DBCs include hip replacement and cataract. These B DBCs meet certain conditions. They should be medically coherent and cost homogeneous. They should have sufficiently high incidence and production volume. And in addition, this BDBCs concern predictable non-acute inpatient or outpatient care and are freely accessible for new independent treatment centers and hospitals. A list A DBC is eligible for transfer to list B when it meets these criteria and when the transfer is supported by the field and technically realizable. Health insurers are not obliged to contract all hospitals, may employ different prices for different hospitals, and may set maximum to the number of DBCs they want to reimburse. And likewise, hospitals are not obliged to contract all insurers and may employ different prices for different insurers. And insurers and hospitals may agree upon lower or higher prices if production exceeds predetermined figure, and may determine the frequency and terms of agreements. So the third instrument to support the transition from a supply-led system to a demand-led system was the introduction of the DBC case mix system. For hospitals were previously financed based on production volume, this BDBCs mean to encourage hospitals and insurers to negotiate on quality. So now we will evaluate in how far the instruments were able to accomplish the transition to a demand-led system. The integration of social and private insurance schemes meant to encourage insurers to compete by critically purchasing care for their customers. However, insurers have been quite reluctant to selectively contract with hospitals and to offer preferred hospital contracts to their customers. There are several reasons for this. A first reason is the limited availability of high-quality information. Insurers do often not have sufficient information to selectively contract with the hospitals. And besides, limited availability of high-quality information makes it difficult for insurers to explain to customers that preferred hospitals are selected because they deliver good quality care. With customers' free choice of health insurers, insurers fear loss of reputation when restricting customers' choice to a limited network of preferred providers. However, under pressure of patient organizations, insurers, and the government, the availability of high-quality information is improving. Since 2005, a growing number of organizations, such as the Healthcare Inspectorate and the Dutch Health Insurance Association, publish annual reports on the performance of Dutch hospitals. A third reason why hospitals hesitate to selectively contract with hospitals is that they run only limited financial risk on hospital care. Because most of the DBCs still concern List A, hospital expenses are still reimbursed based on production volume. The integration of social and private insurance schemes created a strong competition among health insurers, especially in the first year after introduction. Many insurers try to attract customers by offering low-priced contracts, and particularly discounts on group contracts, which are on average about 7% cheaper. In 2006, 18% of the population switched to another insurer. However, as a result of the heavy price competition, health insurers incurred annual losses of about 2% of the annual premium revenue. Since 2007, insurers started to cut operating costs, premiums converged, and switching rates dropped to 4%. In order to increase competition between health insurers, free access to the hospital care market meant to encourage independent treatment centers and private clinics to freely access the hospital market. In order to remain competitive, many hospitals established independent treatment centers. The number of independent treatment centers increased from 79 to 135 in 2009. Independent treatment centers are a very attractive alternative to hospitals because they provide relatively high quality care because of the routine delivery of specific treatments and their easy response to changes in the demand side of the healthcare system. Moreover, independent treatment centers reduce waiting lists of competing hospitals and encourage competitors to improve the quality and efficiency of care. The introduction of independent treatment centers to the hospital market has led to higher accessibility for patients, especially when it comes to straightforward non-acute outpatient care. In order to finance the primary care-based chain based on quality, this BDBC is meant to encourage insurers and hospitals to negotiate on quality. However, health insurers and hospitals predominantly negotiate on production volume and prices. Since 2006, the production volume of List B DBCs increased at a higher rate than List A DBCs, but on the other hand, prices of List B DBCs increased at a lower rate. And health insurers increasingly put pressure on hospitals to charge even lower prices. The table on this slide compares the 2004 prices of 7 List B DBCs to the 2007 prices at 4 health insurers. You can see that the prices differ very widely between health insurers. For instance, for hip replacement, the 2007 price ranged from 7,000 to 11,000. On average, the 2007 prices were 8% higher compared to the 2004 prices. The current practice suggests that negotiations take place annually, but that either party reopens negotiation if required by the circumstances. Examples of such circumstances include long waiting lists, increased public attention for a specific health problem, or the introduction of new technologies. In general, great negotiated price deviations only occur for a minority of the DBCs. More complex and chronic DBCs seem to be less sensitive to market competition. And evidence from the most recent years suggests that hospitals negotiate on the total budget of the B segment rather than on individual DBCs. There are several limitations that restrain health insurers from competing on quality. Firstly, patients assume that quality is equal among all hospitals. The public debate about quality of care is predominantly focused on topics like waiting lists and occupation rates. Secondly, hospitals have contracts with several insurers. This limits the effect of one insurer's effort to motivate hospitals, unless the insurer is responsible for a substantial proportion proportion of the hospital's patients. In addition, an additional consideration here is free riding. Customers who are not insured through the insurer who sets up the value-based purchasing program will also benefit from the quality improvements. Finally, quality is particularly important for patients who are sick. If an insurer achieves recognition for providing high-quality care, it is likely to enroll a disproportionate share of patients with chronic medical problems. Improving the risk equalization fund might reduce the insurer's concern about risk selection. Because of these limitations, the only aspects with which insurers can stand out from each other are improving accessibility to hospitals, the service they themselves provide, and in particular, the cost related to lower premiums and co-payments. The hospital healthcare sector has been radically reformed, and the first stage of introduction of competition between health insurers and between healthcare providers has been completed. The development of the DBC payment system to encourage insurers and hospitals to negotiate on quality is still a work in progress. Thank you.
Again, any questions of the technical nature?
I just asked how they are now dealing with the cost of capital. We just heard from Germany
Yeah, it was not before, but now it is included in also in list B DBCs, but in list A as well.
And if I may, you might want to come back to this question because it might belong elsewhere. But in the UK, or in England rather, the presumption is that fixed price makes people negotiate on quality, whereas the Dutch system seems to have reached the opposite conclusion, but it hasn't worked. It hasn't worked in England yet.
Not yet.
But I just wondered on what basis they thought that the variable price would make people negotiate on quality. I would have thought it had the opposite effect.
They want to encourage the competition between health insurers and between health insurers, between hospitals and between health insurers and hospitals. And so they hope to that they will compete on quality.
I suppose the question is that if you reinforce a given case and you negotiate over price, you could negotiate a lower price by skimping on quality. So you could offset the price reduction by chiseling on quality. So has that happened in the Netherlands, is the question?
I think it has, but it is the intention to solve this problem.
One last one before we get into general questions.
On the quality question, so other, as you said, people have negotiated around waiting lists. Obviously, we're quite familiar with that in the UK. Is there much quality information out there for people to make decisions on clinical quality?
In the past years, organisations have developed performance indicators, and they are published now annually. But it will come. More and more.
Okay, there's a couple of other questions. Hold on to those and we'll come back. So thanks very much, Susan. We'll come back to general questions. Andrew, could I introduce Uten Hakkinen, who's, let me just try to do this, who's from the Finnish National Institute of Health and Welfare, who's going to tell us how DRGs are operated within Finland. And again, we'll have some technical questions at the end, and then open it up for discussion. Thanks.
Okay, thank you for inviting me. I'm also working, as already said, in EuroDRG project. In addition, I'm coordinating so-called EuroHope Hope project. It comes from words European Hospital Performance Efficiency and Outcomes, where we try to develop outcome measures based on registered data, and from UK, Scotland is involved in that project which started this year. Actually, I'm not speaking so much on DRCs because we are not using it in a similar way as in Germany or Netherlands. Before I go to the financing to discuss more financing of hospitals, I want to say some words about the Finnish healthcare system. It's the basic ideas are universal and equal availability. It's mostly public financed. Maybe one important thing is that the role of central government is not so strong as in other countries. And what is most important in Finland, it's the municipalities, so local governments who are responsible for providing not just health services, but social services and basic education. And at this moment we have 342 municipalities, so we have 300 different healthcare systems in a way, because they can do as they want. And then the hospital care is given by hospital districts, and we have 21 hospital districts which are in a way owned by the municipalities. So we have 300 healthcare systems and 20 hospital systems. So it's not so easy to follow what is happening in. Do we have a pointer here?
Just use the mouse.
Okay. So the financing for healthcare comes over 42% comes from the local taxes. So each municipality they collect taxes. Then part comes via government taxes and state pays or state gives subsidies to municipalities according to a capitation formula. And that as I say, the municipalities then they have the money. And they pay to hospitals and health centers. And if we go to more detail in hospital financing system, so it's as I say, the municipality who pays to the hospital districts, and state pays only subsidize for universities for teaching and research. It's that's only money which comes directly from state. So the most important organization is hospital districts, which is they are responsible for most of hospital care. They are managed and funded by municipalities. Each municipality must belong to one hospital district. There are different contractual or negotiation mechanisms between municipalities and hospital districts. So every hospital district can define the system how it works. The budget for hospital districts is based on negotiation and is formally decided by the council, whose members are the appointed for each municipality, and hospital districts also they decide the methods of payments and make decisions about the major investments. Usually the system is such that the payments for municipalities are based on the total budget and predicted use of services. If the budget for hospital district is exceeded, the municipalities must cover the deficit from their revenue. So it can be so that they can, even in the middle of year, they can change the prices if there's not coming enough money to the hospital district. And if there's surplus, the prices by municipalities can be lowered. So the main purpose of pricing system in Finland, it's a matter such that it covers the cost of production and allocates the hospital cost fairly between the municipalities. As I said, each hospital district determines the payment system, which is based on activities. There's a clear trend moving away from old per day based price toward a case based price. And nowadays, 13 of the 21 hospital districts use DRGs as pricing mechanism. But the principles and the rules of for DRGs vary greatly between the hospital districts, and there is no national guidelines how to use DRGs. So actually we don't have a unique system, and for example DRGs it's developed by private firm and not as in other Nordic countries where the state is responsible for developing the DRGs. So some international comparisons for Finnish hospitals. We have done studies on comparing the efficiency between Nordic countries, and the results is that the Finnish hospitals are more efficient than the Nordic ones. We have not looked very carefully about the reasons, but maybe one plausible explanation is that the cost control by the local municipalities it's much more better in terms of cost containment than the counties or governments which are in other Nordic countries. Here are the results of our earlier study. These are the efficiency scores for hospitals and the intervals and the scores are such that if it gets 0.1 it's the most effective, and here are the Finnish hospitals, Norwegian, Swedish and Danish, and especially compared to Swedish hospitals we are about on average about 10% more productive. These figures are from 2002, but we have now also figures for 2006, and the situation is still the same. So then I discuss a little bit about the what is happening in Finnish hospital system. As I say, our government do not have under current legislation much power to monitor the hospital system. But however, a situation changed a little bit in 2005 when we introduced waiting time guarantee, and nowadays those hospital districts which do not meet the waiting time targets, they must pay a fine to the government. So this is I can say the starting for a for a new policy from the government. Other thing is what is happening in Finland is vertical integration. The reforms in Finland happens locally, and there are quite many local reforms, and what has happened in some places in Finland that the post primary care and secondary care has put together with one organization, and so in 2008 about 10% of population in Finland lived in an area where there's only one organization producing both primary care and secondary care, and they are providing also the care of the elderly. And the current initiative from our ministry, there will be a government bill, maybe within 1 month, which again stress the integration between health centers and non-university hospitals. Then there's a great there's a clear trend towards increasing sites, both the producers, hospitals and poor cases or municipalities. For example, in the capital area, there are three hospitals merged into a one hospital. Nowadays, one hospital, Helsinki University Hospital, is producing about 30% of all specialist care in the country. And also the number of municipalities has decreased. This new government bill, which, as I said, will come within 1 month, there will be a centralizing, so that the five special responsibility hospital districts, which are actually based on the university hospitals, the care of disease recurring high demanding treatment will be concentrated to those. And the final idea for the new bill will be the increase of patient choice. Current situation is that the patient cannot choose the hospital, but in the new bill, it is said that the patient can choose the public hospital from its own special responsibility hospital district. So it's the population about 1 million person. But however, the problem is that they have not decided how municipalities then pay to the hospitals or even to the health centers, because this patient choice also applies to primary care, and if this is applied, I think that they should develop some kind of DRG system to the country which applies to all hospitals. I don't know. The end point of my presentation, I will tell you a little bit about our hospital benchmarking work, which is based quite much on DRGs. So we are using DRGs on performance when we are creating performance indicators and so on, but not so much on financing. This is a project which started about 10 years ago, and nowadays it's part of routine statistical system of our unit, and the idea for that was that we want to give hospital managers the information about the areas where the hospital does not perform very well. And this has been during these 10 years. We arrange every year seminars, and we have build and maintain information systems which produce quite much information. So within our database we have, I must first say that in Finland we have very developed register, hospital discharge register, so and we have unique identification number, we can follow the patient all time. So we have within this database all patients contacts in the country from 1998, and we have combined the data so that we have developed cost data and calculate, for example, productivity measures. And now we have at internet data on cost efficiency, user services rates, and process indicators. And what is actually our innovation is that we are not looking just one DLT as usually, but we are looking at the episodes. For example, if we look at one hospital, we combine if the patient have outpatient visit after that, we take this into account. And when we are looking at the whole system, so we can follow in some cases, some complicated cases, a patient can be treated in three different hospitals. So we calculate this into one output, which is what we say episode of care, using the identification number, because we can follow the patients. And the information system is such that all information comes to us at patient level, and then we produce different performance indicators and give feedback via internet. And we have different measures at hospital level, hospital district level, hospital level, specialty level, or even patient group level. So in our web page there are, for example, what is the average length of stay for DRGs, and the hospitals can compare. Here's just one example of what we are doing. So this is a simple productivity measure for central hospitals in Finland, and it's so that one is the level at the average level of whole country, and this DRT based efficiency is based just on the DRT system, and this episode takes into account, as I mentioned, that so because we can follow the patient, and put the different admissions together, and finally I tell you a little bit about our new development in benchmarking, where we have looked at disease level the cost and outcomes of hospital care, where we can compare hospitals, hospital districts, and years. Again, this is based on data which comes now not just from hospital discharge register, but from social insurance register, where we get all information of use of drugs, for example, and then other register, for example, death register, where we can get mortality data, so we can follow, for example, patient 1 year, 2 years, depending on the disease. And we have together 250 indicators of which about 60s is those who are describing outcomes. And about 140 indicate process indicators, which there are, describes outpatient visit, use of procedure, drugs, cost of care, and so on. And here are the diseases which we are working. So we are working on 7 diseases. And what is important when you do comparison, you must do a case mix adjustment, and we use this database to do case mix adjustment, so that when we are comparing mortality or even cost, they are comparable. Here are the one results for the 1 year. Cost of AME patient between the hospital districts. So it's total, we have followed the patients 1 year, and you will find quite big differences, starting from €12,000 to €16,000. Here are the mortality statistics. So this is 1 year mortality, and we can compile them together. So look, are there any relationship with cost and outcomes, and as you see, there is no. So which means that there are great potential for improving the performance even without increasing the cost. So my conclusions, it seems that our decentralized hospital system is rather effective producing services, but we don't have yet information of performance in outcomes, but hopefully within 2 years. There are very big regional and hospital level differences in efficiency, cost, and outcomes. Our government has done new initiatives, but they have not considered how to finance it. Finally, I think that these both projects which I mentioned, they are in a way rather unique in the world, because at least I have not seen similar performance or benchmarking system. And this we have already seen that this has really affected to the both to government's decision, but also activities at hospital level. For example, in one disease, we found that the mortality of low birth weight infants was very low in one university hospital, and after that they started to audit it, and now it's coming to the same level as in other countries. Thank you.
Again, any specific questions for
you mentioned that each municipality has to be a member of a hospital district. Can it actually be a member of more than one?
No, it is under the legislation, yes. Of course, they can buy services if they want to other hospital districts, but usually it's because they need to. They have also some other duties, not just hospital services. For example, they are organizing the patient insurance, and anyway they need to pay some amount to the hospital district. But they can choose if they want. They can choose another. But usually it's because Finland is quite a big country. It's right, quite natural that they belong to the nearest hospital district.
Yeah, I have a clarification with the first speaker. you have mentioned a 3% reduction over the years.
But
you have achieved that. Is there any consideration about increasing in number of patients, or are you keeping the number of patients or remain the volume of service which you have given?
Mm-hmm.
Keeping it remain as it is, and you are using the cost index, or how it is being done? Can you interpret?
If you remember, the slide was
on
the one hand, on the middle there was the statewide base rate, and on top was the hospital-specific base rate. And the aim was to achieve a statewide base rate, and so the hospital-specific base rate was gradually reduced. However, by reducing the base rate, it was... You follow that?
Reducing the base rate, you were able to bring down the cost.
Yeah, you wanted to bring down the cost of the expensive hospitals.
Right. My
and
question is, do you expect that even you reduce the base rate, but number of patients will be remain the same? There are chances patients likely to increase, the utilization likely to increase or reduce.
Okay, that's independent of it, really. Like, if the utilization increases, that's true, then maybe the hospital budget is going to remain the same, even if the hospital-specific base rate is reduced. Yeah. So hospitals can react to this by increasing the number of admissions in order to keep the same budget.
Very interesting.
There was another...
Yes,
so
it's
the system in Sweden and Denmark. So I thought that there was a health council.
They have counties. In Sweden, it's the counties responsible, and they have about 20 counties, and they organize. So it's, but it's the same unit as which is organizing and producing services, and most of financing comes directly to the county taxes. And for this Nordic comparison, it's we can do it because we are using the same DRT system, and so we can define the output in a similar way.
Yeah, other questions.
Capital
costs if you're building a new hospital.
So it's the hospital. This is decide. They can take loan or whatever. So of course, municipalities can also build a if they want. But usually it's hospital district, where the municipalities are owners of the hospital district. But it's and they. They must then finance it. It was about 5 years ago. They get from government subsidies for investment, but it stopped 5 years ago. And now it's they are in a way independent, and they can decide themselves.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Uta. So that's the three presentations. Let's open it up and consider any more general questions that you have. It might be good if you introduced yourself so that the speakers know who you are. But I had one general question. In 1956, there was a huge commission in the UK, Gillibrand Commission, which looked at the costs of hospitals and tried to elicit whether or not hospitals actually knew the costs of what they were doing. And it seems to me that that's still an ongoing issue in the UK, at least, because we might have pricing and reimbursement mechanisms, but it really appears to me that most hospitals don't really have a good idea of the cost base. And I'll maybe ask some of our English compatriots about that just now, but what about in the Netherlands or Germany or Finland? Do the hospitals actually know the costs of the procedures? Do they know what they're doing? Is there a cost accounting base which
relates to the reimbursement mechanism?
For the Netherlands, I think not really, but in order to be able to negotiate the DBCs, a hospital, it's best for the hospital to know the cost. So I think the system is encouraging hospitals to calculate their costs.
So there's an incentive there, yeah. But they don't actually know the cost base as of yet.
I think more and more hospitals are starting to set up costing accounting systems.
Okay. What happened to Germany? Do you know?
In Germany, there's the sample of hospitals which is used to provide detailed cost data, and at least they should be able to. They're using a cost accounting system which is outlined by a cost calculation handbook published by the DRG Institute, and so they all have to adhere to these standards, and so they have to be able to give detailed information about every service they provide, about the costs, and so detailed information about all the costs of treating an individual patient.
That's based on how many hospitals?
That's based on 253 hospitals, right. Or 13% of all hospitals in the country.
Okay. And Finland?
We have Helsinki University hospitals have very good cost accounting system, and nowadays also another university hospital where they have. I just read today one chapter on cost accounting in Europe. I think that we have one of the best in Europe in those hospitals, because we had at patient level. They know how much patient has consumed in drugs or laboratory services or whatever procedures. But it's only in those two big hospitals. But other thing is that because in our benchmarking project we produce whole time the cost data and the municipalities, of course, because they must pay. They want to know what are the costs. And for example, quite many hospitals in Finland, they have a strategy that they want to be within 3 years the most efficient hospitals according to our measures. So there's a in a way taken into account, but it's does not go to the patient level, but they look at the total cost and we also provide data on how much they have used HN6 standardized utilization, so they can compare also how much for example each municipality that they know they have the total cost of hospital services and how much it's based on that they are using more or less, or how much is depending on efficiency of the hospital.
So they can work out the average cost per case,
but they don't really know
how much the cost is.
Yes, so actually we gather the data at specialty level, right. and then we know the production using DSGO episodes, and then we can calculate the productivity indicators using the average DFT cost base.
Yeah. There's a question, but just before that, what's happening in the UK? My impression is that some hospitals are better than others, but there are costing manuals, but there are incentives which are moving hospitals towards getting their cost base, but we still don't know yet.
What that conversation just revealed actually is there's several ways of looking at this, because collecting information for pricing is a very long way from having an understanding of what your internal cost structure is. So, and you may collect information for pricing, but then not use any of that information for how you manage the hospital. And we've already heard today that we're collecting detailed DRGs, 3,000 of them, but then basically managing global budgets, it seems, or at least aggregated budgets. So we would have a similar system for collecting cost information. Every hospital correct yep. cost information. Although
financial cost
information. Yeah, for the pricing of HRGs, they're not quite the same as the HRGs. But there is quite a lot of interest in patient level prostate, which and of service line approaches to costing and performing. So there are different levels of approaches.
I'd say one thing is that we did I work for the Foundation Trust Network and we do a benchmarking project along with McKinsey for hospitals and various services that we do this on. And one of the things we see in that is the big problem with the costing is the trouble that hospitals have with how they assign their kind of overhead costs and their shared costs and how they actually pull that down to individual HRGs. And that's something that they really, a lot of them really struggle on and really aren't very good at allocating. So that can lead to huge sort of variations and a lot of kind of cross subsidies in the system of some people essentially subsidizing other services.
Well, there was a question at the back and then to the front.
Picking up from the very beginning of Vanto's talk, you mentioned equality as being an important issue. And I just wondered if Wilm and the shop could say how important or not. Is as an issue in their country's system, and also whether Anton's got anything more to say about the fact that in such a decentralised system, what you do about the quality of the Finnish state level, whether that's influenced Finnish government policy.
So is equality...
I should have said that Martin from the Welsh Assembly government.
Equality in the Dutch system and... You talked a little bit about it in terms of the risk equalisation account, but equality of access, do you mean, or equality
yes,
of financing?
Because stress was put on equality in the Finnish system. I don't know how big the private sectors are in the Netherlands and Germany, how much top up or co payments come into the picture.
I'm not sure if I understand the question.
So basically, equality across the board in terms of the use of hospital services in particular, right from the financing of hospital services through co-payments or through private opt-out of the social insurance system. They don't have it in Denmark, they have a bit in Germany, but I was going to let the speakers maybe address it, or even in terms of equity of access or equalisation of the hospital, the insurance premiums. So the whole idea of trying to spread the finances and the utilisation across the population.
Or do patients' own resources give them bigger choice if they have their own resources as compared with people who don't have no resources?
No, there's equal access for everybody. And there's a basic benefit for this. So everybody is entitled to have the hospital services for DVCs that are in the benefit package. And I said that we do not have a private sector, we do have a private sector, but it's really small and it's only for care that is not really necessary.
John?
In Germany, I'm a bit confused because your question, I understood quality, but what you said sounded more
equality,
like equality.
Equality.
Okay. And yeah, for equality, in Germany there's the system of the statutory health insurance systems and the private health insurance systems. And so 90% of the population are insured by the statutory health insurance system, but 10% have private health insurance, and that depends on your level of income. If you earn above 4,500 euros a month, you can issue with the private health insurance. Or if you are a self-employed or a government employee, most civil servants also receive subsidies for private health insurance, but the rest of the majority of the population are in the statutory health insurance system. And then for the statutory health insurance system, if you're insured with them, you've got the advantage that you get free coverage for the married partner or for children, whereas in the private health insurance system, you have to pay extra for each individual that is insured. And especially, so there's sometimes a debate about whether it is So whether the high income people are contributing also more money towards the healthcare system because they have to pay these extra costs, also for old age people are contributing much more towards the private health insurances than if they were insured in the statutory health insurance system. And so that's a little bit not so clear. And then there are also tax subsidies now to the general health fund, because the statutory health insurances now receive all their budget through a general German insurance health insurance fund. And you know, so through the tax subsidies, also the higher income people contribute to healthcare. And then co-payments. And co-payments, there are co-payments for every day that you stay in the hospital, but it's capped at, I think, 1% of your income. So during a year, you're not supposed to have a higher co-payments than 1% of your total income.
Gunther, do you want to say anything?
Yes, so I think that our government was, the waiting time currently was one idea, so that there will be a there is of course everybody must with certain limits get services, but there are in Finland we have also private sector and it's reimbursed partly. So if you go to private doctor, you will you need to pay about 50% or 60%, and the rest will be reimbursed from social security. But it does not it's not in hospital care, but mostly in ambulatory care. But I think that the biggest inequity in Finland is in primary care, because we have very developed occupational care. All those who are working, they have usually the employer organized them. For example, if I'm sick, I will just go to the health center, which is paid by my employer. But those who are not working, they need to go to public health centers, and there are problems. That's make it maybe big issue, and it also affects to hospital care in a way, because if you go to hospital, you must have a referral from health center or from occupational care like that.
Okay, there were two questions here.
I sensed from the Finnish presentation that they're going into the pathway and trying to identify the patient episode rather than hospital episode. You're beginning to perhaps ask some similar questions that we're currently trying to address in NHS with program budgeting. Because I think that some of the real issues are not going to be, or the real solutions in the EU nuclear hospitals, but actually finding out what where are the efficiencies across the pathway, inside hospital, outside hospital.
Yes.
But from I didn't sense that from the other two. It seemed to be very hospital focused. Is that the reality, or is it something different?
That's more or less the reality. There was the idea that with the introduction of DRGs there would be more cooperation also between the pre-admission to hospitals and post-admission, because hospitals would try to better coordinate these systems, but according to the research so far that hasn't really happened, and there's still a relatively clear division between the ambulatory sector and the hospital sector.
Yeah.
Even though hospital outpatient activity has increased, because also the law gave new possibilities to hospitals to perform outpatient activities, whereas prior to the year 2000 they were not allowed to perform outpatient activities.
In Holland?
Yeah, I think inpatient and outpatient care is provided by the same organization.
But as an insurance-based system, do the insurers cover more of the whole episode in terms of trying to work out?
It's integrated into one episode, so it comprises both outpatient and inpatient care.
But are they more interested in trying to get the overall cost of the whole episode of care for individual patients, and do they track that and use that?
Yeah, it's registered per individual patient. So if a patient enters a DBC code, is a registered DBC code, then at the end of the after discharge, you can find in the system how many outpatient visits were delivered and how many inpatient visits.
Well, there was a question.
I'm James Manford from UCL Partners, just up the road. Very similar area, my question to the last one, if I put it a slightly different way. I think if we think about a diabetic or someone with asthma, I think one of the biggest challenges our health system has is how you keep that person out of hospital. So there's all sorts of DRGs that could apply to things that don't need to happen if you manage the patient well. In primary care and upstream. So what do the payment systems in the your countries do to encourage the system to keep the patient well so they don't need these hospital-based procedures?
There are several DBCs for DMEs. I'm not sure that there is done something to prevent people from going to the hospital.
This is simply non-hospitalized. Instead of keeping them in a hospital, manage them at home or in a better place.
Yeah, the general practitioner is the gatekeeper of hospital care. So you can only visit the hospital if you have a referral from a general practitioner. And I guess that is the only way to keep someone from getting to the hospital. But once the patient is referred to the hospital, then I think the hospital.
So is there anything in the system like if you've got asthma, if you take certain drugs to a particular regime, other exercises, then you're more likely not to get your illness worse and need to go to the hospital. So is there anything about what the insurance companies do that encourage the primary care doctor to make sure that the patient gets good care?
I don't think so. No, it's really up to the general practitioner.
The primary care physician or general practitioner do the same.
Yes,
sorry.
Any incentives in Germany to hit targets for particular diseases?
They introduced a number of disease management programs to coordinate care for certain chronic diseases like diabetes and hypertension and breast cancer. And there are specific guidelines that the general practitioners have to follow and also to refer them to other specialists to get regular checkups for their feet and eyes in order to prevent from being admitted to hospitals, and also they are then like they are regularly measuring the HbA1c to monitor the quality of the general physician in teaching the patient how to monitor his own blood sugar. And
but
it's not really integrated with the DRG or the hospital financing system. It's more another area which is focused on the general on the ambulatory outpatient sector.
And so, any incentive payment
system? Yes, of course, because the municipalities are responsible for total care. They have incentives to care. Or use those less cost alternatives, and I think that it's working in some places, and especially for care of the elderly, because they also need it's their financing need. The only problem with us is that we have so-called two-tier financing system, so that social insurance institution is paying for medicines and their accounts, because the cost of medicine does not come to their budget, and they have no incentives to reduce use of drugs.
Mm-hmm. the question back. Did you not have a question?
I was under the impression that some of the German sick funds do offer payments for turning patients in the emergency room rather than sending them home. There's enhanced payment for dealing with ambulatory conditions in the emergency room in some German. I mean, it's keeping all these different European systems in your head, maybe in other countries. I'm not aware, and we haven't mastered it, ways of incentivizing hospitals to help improve disease management. This is a major gap. I guess my question, the sort of related question which I did have was, we don't seem to be talking much about doing very big behavior change, getting providers to change their behavior very much. A lot of this just seems to be about big incentives for efficiency improvements, but I wonder whether payment systems can be used in more subtle and sophisticated ways to change provider behavior, or whether it's not really a question for the speakers, it's a general question of do we think payment systems can be used in subtle ways of changing providers?
Well, I think the QoF payments have worked, haven't they? They've changed GP behavior.
I mean, it's a very heavy instrument, it's a very high-powered incentive, and of course it has had a huge number of unintended consequences, and it's overperformed in a rather spectacular way. So
incentive mechanisms do work.
They do work. I think the QoF has changed behaviours rather than allowed GPs to get more money for doing the things they were doing anyway in many cases. So
not too sure about that. I think it's changed their behaviour.
It's changed what they recall.
There was a question at the back and then one here.
All three systems you described are really very data heavy, data collection heavy. But inevitably have some costs. One of the big issues that's here in the UK, or certainly in England, has been the quality of our data collection. So has the fact of relating income to the data that you provide improve the data quality, but also it's linked to the whole sort of burden issue. And I think one has been touched on the sort of resistance from the clinicians about collating all this information. I wonder if there's a view around whether the effort of collecting is worth the output.
Is the marginal cost of collecting all this data worth the marginal benefits?
I think the situation is at least in Finland, the data which we are using actually is there. Finnish hospitals have rather good information system for their own purpose. And we have had this hospital discharge register about 30 years. It's obligatory to send us. Maybe the problem for us is that the quality is not so good. It's coming better when they are using DRGs, because then there comes diagnosis. But other thing is that which is important, that we have developed these indicators together with clinicians, and they, actually when they understand that the data which is collected, it will be also used for benchmarking or for so that they can evaluate their own hospital, then I think that there's a quite big motivation. I don't know what the situation in England, but we are moving to the electronic patient records. I don't know. They say that it will be next year, but maybe 2 or 3 years now. But there's also now a question whether we can use this information for research and benchmarking use, because they are individual based data and actually they are huge possibilities to look at, especially if we are interested in outcomes. It's the only possible way to look at is that you can follow the patient, what happens to patient. Otherwise, you cannot do it.
Yes. We have all hospitals. Actually, from hospital, all hospitals we have at we have all information on both inpatient and outpatient care patient level, and we can link it together with mortality statistics as well as social insurance institutions where they have, for example, drug data. And so it's possible, and we are using it whole time. But the problem for us that is that we don't have data from primary care, outpatient primary care, and that's why when we are looking at the outcomes, we have concentrated only those diseases which hospital takes their responsibility, because we are very interested to look at diabetes or asthma, but however it's the care is given in outpatient basis and we don't yet have the data. Hopefully we are just starting a project in capital area where we try to lose even in primary care Finnish municipalities have rather good system, but the problem is that there's about 10 different companies who are working in the field, and the data do not they have different definitions and so on.
In Germany, the data quality first is usually assumed to be relatively good because it is, on the one hand, checked internally for consistency, like if the procedures match the diagnosis, and then if the costs are kind of comparable to other costs from other hospitals, and if it's logical that the costs are so high for these procedures, and then also the data is also transmitted to the insurances, which have to pay for the cases, and then the insurances check the data whether it is logical that the costs that the patient should fall into this DRG, and they conduct an actual reviews of the patient charts in the hospitals on about 9% of the cases, and so they check whether the codes were correct and they match the treatment in the hospital. And so as the hospitals are afraid of these checks, they are trying to also report good good data on the performed procedures and diagnosis to the data center and the updating of the catalog.
In the Netherlands, I presume, as it's insurance-based, you've got lots of information.
At introduction, we had 100,000 DVCs, and the DVCs have to be coded by the medical specialists. It was a lot of work, so they had to reduce this. And now it will be further reduced to 3,000. But now there are some parties complaining because it is not sure that the groups will be as cost homogeneous as before. So there's always we need to find a balance between the two things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot to mention the marginal benefit and marginal costs of coding in Germany. Like, I read that there was a study comparing how hospital physicians spent their time during the day, and the study found that the amount of time doctors spent on administrative tasks or on coding procedures and diagnosis hasn't really increased since the introduction of the DRGs. Even though when asking the physicians, they all say that they feel that they are more overburdened by coding and diagnosis and procedures. So it is still perceived as one of the main problems of the DRG system, that is administratively complex, but it hasn't really been shown. And how I remembered when I was in the hospital, it really was relatively fast to group a patient into a DRG because there's the software and usually the diagnoses are already somewhere in the system because you have to enter it also for ordering tests, and then the group takes this automatically, and also procedures are somewhere in the computer system, and so it doesn't really take that long for...
So it requires you, it's essentially based on quite a sophisticated computer system.
Yeah.
Which is not necessarily what it is throughout the nation.
Yeah, also in Germany it depends a lot on the hospitals. Like there are private hospitals and non-for-profit hospitals and public hospitals. And it depends a bit, like some employ special coders for checking the data also, and maybe in private hospitals sometimes the computer programs are better than in public hospitals, but...
Okay, there were two final questions and then I think we should wrap up.
No, I just wanted to comment on the impact of what happens in maybe the internal evaluations on the framework, and although it's correct that at the beginning it would have been probably not expected that physicians were rewarded for doing what they were doing them anyway. There have been, it's been observed that there were continuous improvement, but it was not, it hasn't been very impressive, but there has been an improvement. And I think it's, and there is also some evidence that it has had an effect on things that were not necessarily directly incentivized. So there may be benefits to these frameworks that exceed the more limited targets set in the framework itself. But going back to the